Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill left. Now, Wendy's away today, and she'll be away again tomorrow. She's having elective knee surgery.
Because she elected it.
There was an election.
She chose it.
There were primaries. There were caucuses. And then she decided, America decided, that she needed knee surgery. Mm-hmm. So she's doing that today and tomorrow. She'll be back on Monday with gifts for everyone. Anna Balaval is here filling in for her now.
Hello.
And our friend Jimmy Crean is in studio with us. Jimmy is one of my all-time favorite improvisers. Very, very funny man. And celebrating the five-year anniversary. Is it 5 years already of your podcast?
Yes. Yeah.
How can that be?
I don't know. It goes fast.
Improv nerd.
Improv nerd.
Yeah.
Why are you called the improv nerd?
I don't know. I think it's just a title that I came up with, but I've been teaching improv and doing it since I was 18 years old, and I just have such a passion and love for it.
Improv is so, it's one of the, I think anyone should take improv lessons.
I'm with you.
And it could help everybody, no matter what you do for a living, it could help you.
And I think today, like, you know, everybody wants to talk about, like, all the big names that came out of Chicago. Bill Murray, Stephen Colbert, Steve Carell, Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, people like that. But I think the real story about improv gets back to this. Everybody should take it, and everybody is taking it.
Yes.
People, you know, elderly people are doing it in retirement homes.
My wife teaches
I know. She's really big on the North Shore.
She teaches that, yeah.
Yeah, to keep them, you know, keep elderly people sharp.
Your mind spinning.
And doctors are doing it, you know, for better bedside manner. I go into corporations and team building with it. People use it for social anxiety. Everybody in Chicago, if you haven't had a deep dish pizza, been under the bean, or taken improv class, you are not a Chicagoan.
You haven't lived.
You have not lived in the city of Chicago.
I know. So. It was the best thing I did for my career. Seriously.
Well, when you think about it, the biggest fear, and I don't know why this is, but anytime they talk about the biggest fear, it's public speaking. Everybody, for some reason, is very nervous about that. But if you're a teacher or a lawyer, or you make presentations in your job, this can only help you.
Yeah, and I think the cool thing about it is, why everybody should do it too, is you're not doing it alone. Like, if you're doing a public speaking class or a stand-up class, you're up there for five minutes alone, and you want to die when you're done.
Mm-hmm.
But in improv, you're doing it with a lot of people, so you feel supported. You feel like you're part of a community.
Everybody sucks.
Yes, everybody sucks.
Not just you.
Yes, everybody sucks. And then you can't make any mistakes. So not only do you suck, it voids out any of the sucking because you can't make a mistake in
improv. So the podcast... You interview other fellow improvisers.
Yes. Yeah. And that's, I've, you know, over 200 people that I've done.
Wow.
And when we do a live show, which I do at Second City, and what I'm going to be doing for this the Chicago Podcast Festival, I interview them, and then we get to improvise together like a 8 or 10 minute scene.
Mm.
And then we come back and we talk about how we screwed it up or what we did well.
Hopefully what you did well. And
most of them, Bill, have been how I screwed it up.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's all your fault.
Yes. Yeah.
Stand-up comedians blame the audience. Ensemble work blames each other.
Yes. Yeah.
What's the key? I mean, everybody has a different style, but who just does it right? Who have you seen that you say to yourself, boy, he or she, they understand it. They really have mastered this.
I think the guy that's going to be a guest for this the Chicago Podcast 5-year anniversary show is Scott Adsit.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Adsit is amazing because he's an actor and an improviser. There was a person, Stephanie Weir, who was on Mad TV, who was one of the most... powerful improviser. She was an actor, writer. I mean, she could do it all on stage. So those are two people. Dave Koechner was another guy I loved performing
with.
He was great. You know, I think people that can really listen and agree, take people's, because the hardest part of improv, and it doesn't matter if I'm teaching it in corporate America or I'm teaching it for actors, is saying yes to people's ideas. Mm-hmm. And those three people I mentioned, they always said yes to your idea and made you look better.
Here's something, if people have not studied acting or improvisation, they don't understand. They may have heard the terminology, but let's explore this just a little bit. It's what you just said. Don't deny. If you're in a scene somewhere and somebody establishes that it's France and it's 1963, you have to run
don't
with
change
that.
It.
Don't
right.
ask any questions. It's France and it's 1963.
Don't say no.
Right.
It's Spain.
You have to say, hey, it's great that we're on honeymoon, Anna, here in France.
Yeah.
So then now we've taken your idea, Bill, and we've built something versus, no, we're not in France. We might get a laugh, but there's no way to go with that scene. It just dies.
Have audiences changed? And I guess if they have, you could base it on a couple things. Attention spans are shorter and people are more technologically involved than they used to be. So are you noticing that when you're doing improvisation in front of an audience, that things that might have worked 10 or 15 or 20 years ago don't anymore, or sometimes the opposite?
No, I think primarily the people that come out to see Improv Nerd and come and see when I do an improv show is students. Mm-hmm. So they are, they're almost going to it like a class. So they're absorbing everything that we're doing on stage.
Yeah. And that's a good thing.
That's a great
thing. You want that. You want awareness.
Yeah, and you want them to worship you and say, oh, you're amazing and I want to take your class. You want all that.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get much money in improv. Hmm. So you take whatever you can get.
You take adulation.
Yeah.
Right. Is the goal different for a young actor or actress because of shows like Saturday Night Live? Do you see more people kind of starstruck by the process thinking, if I'm good at this, I'll be on TV and that'll lead to movies and that'll lead to billions of dollars?
Yeah, Bill, because when I started back in the 80s, it was like we lived in an artist colony. You know, like if you said in 5 years you were going to go to LA and, you know, be on a sitcom, people would be like, oh, you totally sold out. You know, get out of here. Now people are so much more sophisticated. And so they're, you know, because so many people in improv out of Chicago have gone on to, you know, be writers, directors, and actors. I mean, Jon Favreau, I've interviewed for the podcast, and Adam McKay. These are big time directors, you know, and they're stand-ups that are doing it. So people are getting more sophisticated and they're not getting lost. Like I got lost in improv. I feel like I'm in a the Bermuda Triangle or a black hole. The people that today are like, okay, I'm going to put a writing packet together for Saturday Night Live or one of the late night talk shows.
Yeah.
I think that's the great thing about that generation, because we would get stuck pigeonholed, where these kids are like, well, I'll write my own story. I've never had that kind of creativity. I don't think so. But when people are like, well, come to the table with the whole project planned, I'm like, no, I'd like somebody to produce it because I'm just a good talent at making people laugh. But that's it. I can't. And I think that generation takes those chances.
They're so much more motivated, you know, and they're taking multiple.
They're less afraid.
They're less afraid. Yeah. And they're not like, you know, here in Chicago, in the improv community, you'd be kind of like waiting in line. You know, when is my turn? You know, that guy's been doing it for 10 years. This generation doesn't, they don't care about that. They just want to create. And that's wonderful.
How did this become the go-to city in terms of improv? I know that Second City is here and I.O. and I understand that. But why did everybody figure out that this is the city that understands how to do this?
The weather, Bill.
Is it the fantastic weather?
Yeah, fantastic weather. The food, the bars scene. You know, you can get ramen noodles at most Walgreens. I think it's like 3 for $1.
That's not bad.
Yeah,
that's a good price.
I think, you know, the reason why Chicago is still and you know, since I started now, like L.A. and New York both have, you know, become big players in improv. And a lot of the big players in New York and LA have come from Chicago. But I think Chicago it's not affected by the entertainment industry. So you do a show at some bar, you do bar prov in the back of, the chances that you're going to be picked for Saturday Night Live doing a show back and in the bar there is like 2%. But if you're in New York or in L.A., there's a chance you know, the Daily Show's there and Fallon is there. You may be discovered. And I think this is the best training. For better or worse, you're not going to be seen. You're not going to be seen for better or worse. But it's great for training.
But it's stage time.
It's great time. And the other thing is the audience support it, you know?
Yeah.
You're not going to find that in L.A. and New York as much.
Yeah. Jimmy Corrine is here. He is the Improv Nerd, Accept No Imitations, celebrating 5 years of his podcast, Improv Nerd. The Anthonyum Theater on November 18th, that's where you want to go for the Chicago Podcast Festival, chicagopodcastfestival.org, or Jimmy's own personal website. That's Jimmy Corrine, C-A-R-R-A-N-E, jimmycorrine.com has more information. We'll come back and I want to talk about an event that happened to you about 17 weeks ago that changed your life. All right, that's coming up next. It's Bill and Anna in for Wendy on WGN. Bill Leffen and Anna Balaval from the WGN-TV Morning News, filling in for Wendy, along with Jimmy Corrine, actor, writer, improviser, teacher, comedian, author. You're a lot of different things,
oh,
Jimmy.
Oh, yes. And a father, too.
And a new dad.
That's what we wanted to talk to you about. 17 weeks ago, you had a daughter. Changes things a little?
Yes, it really did. Well, first, Bill, I'm mad at you because you didn't tell me how hard it was.
Oh, it's hard.
You know, we went to baby school for 4 weeks before that. And
wait, baby school?
Yes. The Evanston Hospital, they make you go to, you know, when you're 52 years old, you have to pass these tests. So I had to go to baby school, and they didn't tell me how hard it would be to have a baby.
It is.
They don't sleep, and it doesn't matter what you say to them. They don't listen to you. And so, I mean, it's been hard, and it's just been joyful at the same time.
There's nothing better. no matter what you ever do in your life, you look down and you just go, this is the best that could ever be.
Yeah, but I'm mad at you, Bill. Why don't people say that? It's like a secret society. They wait till you have the baby and then they tell you, right. Oh, yeah, it's hard the first couple months.
And you didn't go through labor, Jimmy.
Right. No.
They lie about that, too.
Yes.
Right? Is that it?
I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay.
You don't want to say
more? I'm not going to add to that. Okay. Because every time I do, people call me crazy.
What
and
do
that
you
I share too much.
No, I like it when you share too much.
That's fine when you share too much.
It's awful. No one tells you how bad the recovery is going to be. And then when you get home, you're like, what do I do with this now?
Yeah. And here's the other thing. And I hope I don't, you know, light up the phone lines here. When the baby comes out, and I don't care whose baby it is,
yes.
They're ugly. They're ugly for
Agreed.
About 48 hours.
Agreed.
But they don't tell you that.
Unless it's a C-section baby, because those have perfect heads because they weren't pushed out a canal.
Mm-hmm.
Mine looked like boxers.
Right.
I mean, like, seriously, I was like, oh. And then my daughter, they needed forceps, so she had that thing around her
sure,
forehead.
Sure, yeah, right.
Like, I'm going to love you.
But.
But when Betsy came out, my daughter,
oh,
I'm like,
Betsy.
Oh, my God, they didn't tell me it was going to be ugly. And then I went up to the nursery, and then all I could do was compare my baby to everybody else's. Why didn't I get a better looking baby? And 48 hours, they become beautiful,
yeah.
But they should tell you that. Yeah. That 48 hours is like, what did I do?
Are you overprotective?
Yes.
You are overprotective.
Yes, totally overprotective.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How has this manifested itself? Is there anything individually, specifically that you go, oh, I never used to do this, and now I'm doing this?
Like Lauren, my wife, she's like, oh, we should have a babysitter. I'm like, I don't think we're ready for a babysitter.
Until when? At what point will you be?
About four.
When she's 4 years old?
Yeah,
4 or 5?
No. Do it for Lauren. Don't. You have to get a babysitter soon.
You have to get
That's
out.
The other thing that I didn't realize, too. It puts stress on the marriage.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
And I did something which I am embarrassed to talk about, especially as an improviser. We weren't sleeping, and Betsy wasn't sleeping at night, and
yeah.
She was getting up. So I read this book. It was a sleep training book where you would – your Anna's already
– Because I
you
read
know
two
this
of
book?
Those.
And what did you – did it work?
Nope.
Yeah, and the same
She's
thing –
She's 9, and she still doesn't sleep well.
Oh.
Okay, so we did this, and the whole concept was to get them to eat every 4 hours. Well,
yeah.
You know, when you have a baby, like they want to eat every 2, 2.5 hours.
Sure.
And if they don't, there's going to be an explosion. They're going to have a meltdown.
Yeah.
So, you know, Lauren went along with this, and later she admitted she just did it to please me, mm-hmm. And, you know, it didn't work. And
yeah.
She said to me, like, the night before we, you know, pulled the plug on the whole thing, she's like, what would an improviser do?
Did she?
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Like, yeah. Well, wow. Yeah. So I got the clue, hey, maybe I should just follow the baby, you know, like I do in improv. And
yeah.
That's what you got to do.
Yeah.
But as a control freak, you're just like, just do what I say.
I think the older you are, too, because I was 33 when I had my daughter, 38 when I had my son. You have most of your life planned and it works perfectly and you know how to do your job. You're excellent in improv, awesome teacher. You're 52. You're like, I know how to manage things,
yep.
Other students, children. And then you have this baby and nothing works.
You're absolutely right.
Nothing works.
That's
yep.
It.
And there was times where we wanted to put her on Craigslist, and people should be honest. The first couple months, you're like, you want to
think about it.
You want to drop the baby off somewhere. You want to return it, but there's nowhere you can return it.
Nope.
So I don't care if you keep the receipt from the hospital; they're not going to take it back.
When my daughters were born, Jimmy, my friend Mike Toomey, who you mm-hmm. work with on WGN TV Morning News, he walked through. We were living in an apartment at the time. And he walked through the apartment with me and he said, you can't have that. You can't have that. Those have to go. You have to move those higher. You can't have those. Like just things like just plugs, you know, like in electrical outlets
yeah.
That you would never even think. Well,
attach furniture to
that
walls.
Sort of thing.
That's one thing that no
cabinets,
one, you don't
like,
think of.
You know how you put, you just put like laundry detergent in a cabinet. You
yeah,
know,
no.
You can't do
They'll
that.
They'll drink it.
They'll drink it all.
But that was a good friend for Mike to do
yeah.
That.
Yes.
You know, because those are the kind of things you're like, when you're really tired and it's been a tough week, you're like, oh, really? I got to move that cabinet.
Yes.
I've got to make, you know, like
yeah.
You, there's just, it's one more thing where it's annoying. Where if people were honest about this and
yes.
Said, okay, this is the reality of it, I think I could accept it. I could accept the joy even more because there is so much joy having a
yeah.
Baby, but there's so much hard work too.
Oh, yeah.
And you're, for me, it's like you're grieving your old life.
Is
Absolutely.
That true?
Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Yeah.
I remember two phone calls that were key. My mother had a friend. They were 70 back then when Amelia was born. And she's had three kids. They're grown adults. She has grandchildren.
Yeah.
And I picked up the phone and I was like, hi, how are you? And she's like, do you like the baby yet? And I said, what? Wow. She goes, when they're first born, it was hard for me to feel the rush of love didn't hit me immediately.
Really?
She was like, because the fear took over. The, I have to bathe this baby. I got to make sure it doesn't die on me. Like, you're feeling like, what do you need from me? And I remember looking at pictures of traveling with my husband thinking, I'm never going to be able to do that again.
Yeah.
And I had another girlfriend who said, if you're afraid of bathing her, have somebody else do it. If you're afraid of changing her, my mom bathed my daughter, my friend Joanna told me, for a month. Because I was so scared of this baby.
Yeah.
And we were grown women.
Yeah.
And you were joking about, like, you know, because we had talked before I had Betsy.
Mm-hmm.
I was terrified. You know, mm-hmm. I was terrified of having a baby, and I was terrified. I'm still terrified. I'm just less terrified, you know?
It's too late, Jimmy.
Yeah, I know. And then you just got to accept it. You're like, okay.
You know what happens now, though? You'll feel like, I'm sure you felt this too, you'll feel like your life is on a fast-forward button.
Yeah.
Like, my daughters are about to turn 20 in December. They'll be 20.
I cannot believe that.
It seemed to me like 3 or 4 years ago they were born, but now they'll be 20. And you'll see everything that happened before Betsy came along moved at a regular pace, and now it's just really fast.
Well, I have a respect for both of you because you have multiple kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like once we had one, we're like, oh, we're never doing that again, you know? How do you get over that?
It took me 4 years. They're 4.5 years apart. This one had no choice.
A minute apart.
They're a minute apart.
We had one, and a minute later, we're like, we should have more. All right, we'll have more.
Yeah. I think it's the most wonderful thing, but it is a lot of work.
Yeah.
And then you feel this joy. Like, I'm at that point where she's 9, and I'm so proud of this person that I helped create. And I don't know that all of it is my husband and I, but I'm like, you're a really cool kid.
Yeah.
And with my son, I see him do things, and I'm like, it's just joy like and love like you've never known
before, or
an exhaustion like you've never known before.
Jimmy, wait till the day comes where you walk in the door. Maybe you're at the store, maybe you're shopping, wherever you are. You walk through the door and you hear the words, Daddy's home. And you just see that smile on the face. It goes through you like nothing. You can't believe the elation when that happens.
I'm getting a little of that because she's not close to talking, but I'm getting the kind of the laughter with no sound, you know, with the big, just opening her mouth and her eyes bug out.
Yeah.
And that's been like, that's kept me going.
Cause
like the first couple of months, you're like, I'm not getting anything. I'm feeding you. Can't you at least put your bottle in the sink, you know?
Or smirk.
Yes,
right.
Smirk.
You've had bad laughers in a crowd.
Right.
Come on, smirk.
And I am training her to be a good audience.
Oh, you are?
I do a little thing when I change her diaper. I call it the poopy dance, where I just do, I kind of just move the top of my arms like this, and she just smiles and she beams.
Good.
I'll tell you, it would work on the two of us if you did it
for
us.
Doing it right
do it. Oh, that's really beautiful.
That.
I love that.
I
have
that's a little
adorable.
Song, doing the poopy dance, doing the poopy dance.
Is that downloadable? Can I go to iTunes and get that? Because I would love to own that.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you actually change the diaper?
I do.
Or is this Lauren changing the diaper?
No. I do. And I have to say, I was really afraid of it. And then I like changing the diaper, and I like giving her a bath because there's this sense of accomplishment.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
You didn't have any nieces or nephews? You didn't babysit anybody?
Yeah, I did have. I had tons of nieces and nephews. But it's
this
different,
different.
When it's your kid.
Right. Yeah. Right. Jimmy, so good to see you, and I'm so happy for you, not just for your professional side, but for your familial side. I'm so glad that Betsy exists and that you're experiencing the joys of fatherhood. Go see Jimmy. It's 5 years he's been doing his podcast, Improv Nerd. So what you need to do is go to chicagopodcastfestival.org. All the information's there. He's got a big show coming up on November the 18th at the Anthonyum Theater. His own personal website is jimmycrane.com. And Betsy, for people who are texting in, Betsy is not actually on Craigslist. He was kidding. You cannot purchase Jimmy's baby.
DCFS Jimmy, is on the line.
Right.
Oh, jeez.
Great to see you.
Great to see you, and I love you, Bill. Thanks.
Right back
Thanks,
at you. A quick break, and then some news. Bill and Anna in for Wendy on WGN.